From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 705, The Windows Cycle with guest Paul Thurrott. Recorded Friday, June 5th, 2020. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Bringing back one of my troublemaker guests, and actually the last trip I took before the world ended. It was a Well, this is coming out in July, so it's almost 4 months to the day when this publishes that I arrived at your place. It's Paul Thurrott. Hi.
I don't think the pandemic was my fault.
No.
Or your fault.
No.
But yeah, that turned into an interesting week.
It sure did. And there was a moment there because we still had the show. Mm-hmm. We were still trying to figure out if we're going to do Dev Intersection, which at this moment seems absurd. Right. But at that time in early March, and there was sort of this conversation of, should I just stay in the U.S. so that I can go to Orlando rather than go home? And it was
I will say, and not that anybody needs to know this, you are an excellent house guest.
Oh,
you could have stayed here for as long as you wanted.
I appreciate that.
You know, but then at the last minute, of course, you had to get going. Yeah. And it got kind of harried at the end.
Yeah. Well, it was like the day before I was scheduled to fly home anyway. Disney said they were going to shut down the park. So Orlando was over. That was the end of the show. And then the Canadian government said all Canadians should come home. And so, you know, Stacey's like, get back home. And so, yeah, weird. And all I was doing is delivering cheesies, right? I mean, that was the whole
thing. That's right. By the way, so like a thief in the night, he leaves. leaving behind him a trail of cheesies.
Cheesies, yes.
And it is kind of how we've been getting through the pandemic, I have to say.
And for those who don't know, so in Canada only, a company called Hawkins makes a crispy cheese snack similar to Cheetos, but infinitely superior.
It's not even. It's a Toyota Corolla is a car, and so is a Porsche. but that's, you know,
that's where the similarities at.
Yeah. They both have four wheels.
So yeah, I introduced you to them last year in 2019, and now you're like, I thought the alcohol was bad.
That's right. Right. Yeah, you're on a roll. You've introduced my greatest vices.
This is my purpose in life.
You're like the Loki character in my life. That's it.
I'm just here to bring you new vices anyway. So since you clearly cannot buy them in the U.S., maybe let's call it the price of admission to stay for a few days was several bags of good cheesies.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, this damn coronavirus, you know, we would have come out and seen you guys. Mm-hmm.
That was the plan for build.
We would have been in Seattle. That would have been great, you know.
But all of
it's
that.
Hard to, I don't even want to think about this stuff. My wife and I were going to go to Paris for our anniversary.
Yeah.
And we've pretty much been looking out the window.
Yeah. Well, and I got to admit, like, I like being at home. It's not like I'm not enjoying myself. And I feel like my marriage has benefited from being home more, which may be a little crazy.
Yeah. Nice.
But it's very interesting times. Did you spend any time watching Build now that it went all online?
I did. In fact, I have to give Microsoft a lot of credit for that show. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure how they would pull it off. And in many ways, I think they've established a template for how other companies can do this.
Yeah, certainly set a bar.
It's a busy week. And there was a lot of content.
Yeah. And they did their best, I thought, to really think in terms of, well, now that we aren't bound to a conference center in Seattle, how do we serve, you know, the most people possible? 48 hours continuous is kind of nuts, but, you know, as someone who makes events.
I think there are things from the show that will inform the future, even when we do have in-person events. Mm-hmm. So one of the big things they said to us up front the press, that is, because they gave us a briefing about what their plans were, was we're not going to have a giant 90-minute keynote. We're not going to do a vision thing. We're not going to spend a lot of time talking about the future. And if you kind of look at the schedule, it was really short, you know, whack, 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 30-minute or less sessions. And I really like that format. And I think it's very respectful of the people who are home and have kind of mixed schedules, and it's not clear how or when you're going to be able to do things. But I also think, you know, when they look forward to a day where, you know, maybe some people are going to be in a room somewhere together, and they'll maybe have a big online component as well. They did something right with the schedule, and I hope they keep to that. I thought that was really nice.
The shorter format's really interesting because you're not paying, like, it's tough to do that in person because it takes time for speakers to get set up on a stage, and that's the constraining resource, and it just doesn't exist in the online model.
Right, right. So, yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
And it's a little more snackable that way.
I go to every conference with the intention of, I'd like to get to some sessions, I'd like to do this. And ultimately, I'm just too busy for that to happen. And a lot of times, I would say every time, really, I'll end up watching sessions online afterwards. Sometimes I'll watch them on the plane ride on the way home too. And this show was just, it was so jam-packed. I had that thing on basically both of those days, most of the time. Live, and I spent the next 2 weekends watching more sessions. I had a new tab. There was a ton of content. I thought that was great.
Yeah, very, very powerful approach to that.
Yeah, yeah.
How much is your horse still hooked to Windows, Paul? Because they've had a bad quarter. I don't even know how to explain the latest update debacle. What do you say?
Yeah.
Was it build 2004? So, like what happened there?
This is still fog of war, unfortunately. So we're not 100% sure as we discuss this, but I have to say, I mean, I'm someone who thinks that the Windows as a Service update schedule is a little too aggressive.
Sure.
And the thing that they did last year where they turned the second of the biannual updates, the feature updates, into what is really a cumulative update that just kind of marketing as a feature update. And it really was just 6 more months to fine tune the thing and maybe throw in 1 or 2 small features was a reasonable compromise. And with this year, you know, it looks like they're going to do the same thing. This particular release, 2004, they started testing it with the public, I think it was February 2019. So this is something that they've been testing for 15 months.
Wow.
And you think, well, that's neat, actually, right? They were aligning it, I think, with the Azure schedule because obviously SAM backend and so forth. And okay, you know, this might erase some of the problems. You know, this plus the 2019 schedule, you know, you do this again, we have even more time for the big one. This should go great, you know. It's really kind of unclear what's happening because, you know, for one thing, there were known issues that came up during the testing process with the Insider program. But then the thing released and they had a dozen or more known issues that had never come up. And I can't believe that they just suddenly realized these were known issues. They must have known about these things.
Yeah. I wonder if the part of the problem is that the Insider's machines are not daily driver machines.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is certainly an engagement issue there. But still, I mean, if you accept that there are at least 1 million people, right, who are actively testing this thing, I don't know. I you know, we keep coming back to the same thing with Windows. You know, there was an organization within the Windows team that did this kind of testing and they got rid of those guys. And,
yes. I appreciate the presumption being, hey, you know, we have the insiders, they'll do it for us. I just don't think it's working.
Yeah. I think there's evidence that that's the case. And I don't say that to disparage the Insider program. I think that's an excellent idea. I always did. I still do. I theoretically, at least, it's a great idea. But yeah, I think they're relying on it a little too much. And it's not their fault. I mean, there's just so much you can do with an audience that size.
Yeah.
And I think the reality is you get this thing out in the world and then suddenly the brakes get jammed on really quick. It's too bad.
Well, and I would hope that they are doing good statistical analysis, say, well, what classes of problems are we turning up here that aren't getting tested in the Insider model and that we can build out you know, don't, it can't be all or nothing. The insiders clearly do a certain number of things.
Right.
So find the things I got to think it's enterprise stuff. It's like, that's what's not being caught.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And by the way, I'm sure that business is where engagement is lowest in the insider program. You know, from Microsoft's perspective, I mean, the marketing spin on this is, you know, the system's working, right? They're doing a very deliberate rollout. They're doing it first to machine configurations they know to be good. As those results are positive, they'll expand that base, et cetera. So if this thing goes out slowly, you can make a case that that's fine in any circumstance. You can make a really good case during a pandemic that the last thing Microsoft wants to do is throw out an update that screws things up for people while they're trying to work from home and don't have good access to tech support.
Yeah, and it's like, are you really making the IT guy have to go to that person's home? Is that where you're at?
Right. So, and honestly, aside from some power user stuff, you know, the Windows subsystem for Linux 2, and there's not a whole lot there. And the types of people who would be interested in those new features in 2004 are technical enough that they're probably in the insider program. Right. They can handle this. They can manually install it if they want. So, you know, maybe it's no harm, no foul. But
it was such a scramble that week.
It is confusing.
I mean, again, we want a quiet one.
Exactly. And honestly, the bigger, I don't know if this is the bigger problem, but another problem is Microsoft makes PCs.
Right.
And a lot of those computers are not getting this update. They're on the block list. I mean, and I've used this example before, but imagine if Google has been testing Android 11 all year and August comes or September or whatever it is, and they finally release it and they say, okay, it's going out to these Samsung devices, these Sony devices, these LG devices, and it's not going out to any of ours because we have a blocking problem. what have you been doing? You don't test it on your own computer. Yeah,
why wouldn't you do that first? I mean, just from an optics perspective.
Their PC business is so small. It is comprised largely of businesses that are dedicated to Microsoft, like Microsoft, and individuals who are enthusiasts, developers, whatever, and just are in this community, want the Microsoft hardware completely. I'm part of that. I love it.
Sure. Love my Surface Book.
Yep. One of the things one might expect as a Surface owner is that you get first pick on the new features.
Yeah.
That's just strange.
Yeah, it's very strange. It's a very strange political decision. And of course, the anger one of the sources of anger came from Microsoft employees that weren't using IT for update. They were using the consumer update to their machine. Yes. And it mangled it. And they were like, this is nuts. Like, how can this be true?
I know. I can't explain it. I don't know. Just, you know, and unfortunately, I feel like this kind of thing keeps happening. And it's like a lot of things in life. You react. You say, well, we're going to make sure this never happens again. And, you know, 6 months goes by or a year and it happens again. You're like, okay. This time we're going to make sure this never happens again.
Yeah. And I think all of us are sort of thinking, well, you're going to get better, right? Like these will eventually stop. They just haven't.
Yeah. So the good news is because of this new system, which maybe becomes permanent, they've got that major update the first half of the year, the minor update in the second half. They're serviced the same. They are literally using the exact same updates. It's not two different versions of Windows internally.
Right.
That keeps things a little simpler. And if you look at it as kind of a longer rollout, it's not a, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 month thing. It's a year thing.
Right.
And plus that second one, the one that comes out in the second half of the year, will be serviced longer for businesses. It's, you know, it's not all bad. I'm trying to see the sun behind the clouds a little bit, but
they are, and they are maturing, but at the same time, you've absolutely made the case of when the new thing comes, wait a month.
Yeah.
Like no IT guy worth his salt is looking at this and going like, I don't need this in my life. I can wait.
It's weird though, right? You know, if you go and check for it, you might actually get a little graphic, but it's got a cute little cartoon of a computer and it says, hey, there's something new coming. You're not getting it. you know, it doesn't tell you why.
No, just like, but it's not for you. I'm sorry. I mean,
you getting it could literally be detaching a dock. Would be enough. You have no idea.
Right. You don't know what it is. It's making it uncertain to go on your machine.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Yeah, it's very odd. But and the problem, of course, is that if nobody installs it, then they're not going to find those problems. You're just postponing it, right?
Like, I know.
This is such the classic change is good, you go first situation that we're in.
It reminds me of one of those wartime rationing posters, you know. It's like, you got to do your part for the community.
Yeah. Take one for the team. Install this on your machine. You didn't need it, right? You're going to be okay. But you got to use it enough to actually break it.
I mean, I've installed this thing on maybe not a dozen machines, but certainly several computers, I including Surface devices. Yeah. I've not had any issues.
It's just been fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just odd. And that's part of it where you wonder if is it the install process or the update process that was a problem rather than it's the, once the actual bits land, you're good. There's just no clarity around any of this.
I ponder the irony of a company that delivers software, and that is literally their only function, not being able to deliver software.
Well, and I'm going to reference the article that thinks only in your premium set. So, about this whole conversation on installing software on machines from an enterprise perspective, everyone I'm talking to these days, just avoid it. You use web pages because the browser already has the security context and the pain of installation is not trivial. It's a constant issue.
Yeah, right. And here we are. I mean, it's 30 years into this PC revolution or more, and we're still struggling with this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But this is I do feel like the web is kind of the end game, and that's true across all personal computing platforms, not just PCs and Macs and things, but, mobile as well. And it's for that same reason. I've been digging up some of my archives. I found some interviews I had done with folks on MSN back in 2005, I think it was, the Windows Group 2010-ish, and Microsoft when they turned on Azure, which was originally Windows Azure. Steve Ballmer went around the country talking to CEOs and telling them how the cloud was the future. And one of the big benefits was, you don't have to install anything. It happens on the back. We just do it once. And if something goes wrong, we can fix it. And we don't have to worry about reaching all those machines. If there's a security vulnerability, it puts the onus, in that central location, not down at every client, some of which are not connected all the time, or we just don't know the status of it. It all made a ton of sense, and it still does. But obviously, as a platform, the web needs to mature. Still.
Well, without a doubt, it has. Like, it's come a long way.
Absolutely, it has. Yeah. Yep.
And Paul, I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message. How many group policy objects and mobile device management policies does it take for your organization to manage your Windows update cycle? 5? 10? Maybe you don't know. How would you like to get it down to one single policy? Sounds impossible? It isn't. When you manage all your Windows desktops, domain-joined and non-domain-joined machines with PolicyPack, PolicyPack enables you to take all Windows update settings you need and get it down to one little GPO or one little MSI file, and that's it, you're done. PolicyPack does all the hard work of detecting which system should be in what Windows channel, what system should be in what ring, and which system should get quality updates. Stop the GPO and MDM profile sprawl. One policy, that's it, you're done with PolicyPack. Learn how other IT admin experts have managed their Windows updates with PolicyPack. Come to policypack.com/WU for our simplified guide to Windows Update for Business. That's policypack.com/WU. After that, come take PolicyPack for a test drive and reduce your update complexity but maintain flexibility. PolicyPack, securing your standards. And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell. That's Paul Thurrott. And this seems to be our annual conversation about the pain of Windows.
Jeez. Which is funny because, I mean, Windows is kind of the center of my, I don't want to say my life, my professional life, I guess. But, in many ways is certainly very prominent in all aspects of my life. I love it.
Yeah.
I've always equated this with, my kid comes home from school with bad grades. I mean, I love him, but I still want to fix the problem.
Yeah. He should be better. You can get an A here. But the side effect of the web, as we talked about in the first half, is this, the operating system is just not as important. You know, I as a developer now can build a piece of software that runs across all these machines as long as I build it with HTML and JavaScript.
Yeah. And, you know, was it Mark Andreessen, I think, who, I don't know if he was quoting someone else or he said this himself, but, you know, Windows will be reduced to a slightly buggy set of device drivers on which this other platform runs, you know, maybe a little ahead of its time, but as spoken back in the mid 1990s or whenever that was. But yeah, you know, and look, from a developer perspective, this is the dream. Mm-hmm. You know, this was the Java write once, run everywhere promise, you know. The ability to target multiple platforms and do so in a very sophisticated way with a single code base is the dream. And then being able to deploy it once on the back end and update it and have it go out to everybody immediately.
Yeah. So everyone's always running the latest version. Mm-hmm. You know, this is what the web actually gave us, was a consistent security context, a vaguely consistent set of rules for how you make software, and continuous update.
And I think now that Microsoft has adopted Chromium and I think has a more firm footing in that world than maybe they did in the past. Mm-hmm. You can see it. I mean, they're driving change via web standards that will add native capabilities to web apps that don't just benefit Windows, but will benefit other platforms as well. And so some of the things they already have, like notifications and so forth, can look native on whatever platform, and are literally native on whatever platform they run on.
Yeah.
So you'll get, you know, Android notifications on Android and Windows notifications on Windows 10. And this is the, I think, answers some of the complaints, because I know some people still feel that the native platform has certain advantages. And of course it does. But, you know, at great cost as well, complexity, security. And then just the problems you get with having so many different platforms you have to support. You know, different versions of the same app that look different, work different on different platforms.
And this gets back to this whole argument of why are we fighting with these problems of multiple versions and update challenges and so forth when there is this solution over here that clearly has gotten better.
It's a hard transition to make. You know, I think it was Brad Smith recently was doing a virtual talk, and he said, look, we were wrong on open source. 20 years ago, we should have done this differently. I don't think that the Microsoft of that day could have done anything differently. And I think people like us who came up in this world, you have this certain mindset, and it's, you know, open source people sort of saw it as open source versus proprietary. I think I would have looked at it more like, well, there are native platform advantages to Windows. You know, you ran Windows because of the applications. That's why you didn't pick a Mac in many cases. That's why Linux was never acceptable in many cases, you know?
Right. Yeah. Just
get out of that mentality.
Well, and again, so, but the operating system just ends up being a host for browsers. So you don't need to worry about anything else. Just try and make sure the drivers aren't too buggy.
By the way, that may sound unappealing to some people. Mm-hmm. And use Chrome OS, for example, it actually is kind of unappealing to me. Yeah. But there is a simplicity to a system like that. And that simplicity makes it more reliable and secure and easier to update. You know, there's so many things that go through my mind when I think about this. But, you know, one of the big changes that's occurred in mobile over the past few years, and it happened on Windows 10 as well, is this kind of separation between what are apps and what are system components.
Right.
And the system components are maybe on their own schedule. And Android and iOS, it's once a year. Windows, for some reason, is twice a year. But you can, the things that people actually use, the mail app, the calendar app, you know, the web browser, whatever, those can be updated on their own schedule. They could be updated every single day. And I think that separation works. Mm-hmm. Like that's worked.
Well, but it was politics inside of Microsoft that drove them to put things into Windows.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and that, yes.
To the point where they've now become an impediment.
Yeah. And the way things went with Windows is kind of like the up and down of the stock market. I mean, it depended on the year and the version of Windows and who was running Windows.
Right.
But, you know, I know in Windows Vista, there was a big call to pull in things that used to be MSN actually, mm-hmm. and make them part of Windows. And that included that calendar app and the mail app and everything else. And then throughout that process, they realized, well, you know, we don't really get to update these things all that often when they're part of the OS.
Yeah.
Let's pull them out again. And that became Windows Essentials and Windows 7. And, you know, it kind of goes up and down. But
I think they're going even further with that now with the WinUI stuff. Like they're actually going to pull that all that UI components rather than resonating with the operating system. It's a separate install. And so devs get to use it and deploy it. Yes. You don't have to count on figuring out what version of Windows 10 you're running to be able to run an app.
Yeah, there are two things like this going on right now. I think the .NET Core stuff, which is becoming .NET, mm-hmm. is another example of this where you can have different versions of it. You can embed this into your app, and you don't have to worry about DLLs and versions and things like that. And then the WinUI separate, a lot of people, just normal users, probably don't even realize this is happening. But when Microsoft would add user interface features to UWP, they were tied to a specific version of Windows 10. Yes. So developers would look at that and say, well, you know, I want to use this thing, but there's no one using that version of Windows 10 yet. So,
well, and when I say to IT, hey, I've built this great app, you have to push XYZ version of Windows out to everyone so they can use it. They're like, ha, talk to me next year.
Right. And this had come, you know, it's funny. The approach that Microsoft finally settled on with, well, we'll call it Project Reunion because I think it's going to be more than WinUI eventually, but is a good one. And it's one I didn't anticipate, although you hear it and, you know, retroactively, like, yeah, they should have done this all along. This totally makes sense. But I had interviewed a couple of developers about this type of thing. The person I speak to from Corel, for example, was saying, look, we pay attention to what they do in each version of Windows 10, but we can't support that until we know the majority of our user base is on that version or better. And now this won't be a problem anymore.
Yeah. Now you take that away. Maybe we're both playing the old guy card here. We talk about, like, we see this as a cycle, right? Yeah. That our reaction to this is, okay, we've realized there's too much consolidation and things need to cycle back out again. And it's going to take a couple of versions to make a difference. The question is, will it make a substantial movement? A lot of these cycles just don't seem to amount to anything.
Yeah. So the two big things we just talked about, I think, are two sides of this coin for kind of the future. So the WinUI Project Reunion stuff, to me, the bigger opportunity there is legacy apps, of which there are tons.
Millions. You know? Literally millions.
Yeah. So you have some kind of a WinForum, WPF, whatever, Win32 app. And now you want to update the UI to make it more modern and take advantage of some of that stuff that previously was specific to UWP. I think that's fantastic. The notion that someone is going to go into Visual Studio and start a new WinUI app, you know, desktop or UWP today, I don't know.
Seems pretty remote. It's such a hard argument to greenfield a client app. How do you justify that?
That's what I mean. You just can't.
Yeah.
You know? So that's where the web comes in. And I would say some other interesting things, cross-platform frameworks. Flutter is a good example today. I think where Xamarin Forms is going with .NET MAUI, maybe. Sounds good, because now they're opening it up past Android and iOS to Windows and the Mac. Flutter targets all of those environments as well as the web, or will soon, I should say. That's interesting. And again, this is that same dream, the right ones run everywhere dream, and we'll see. I've spent a lot of time with Xamarin Forms lately.
Sure.
It is
challenging.
It's a bit of a mess.
Well, we over on .NET Rocks, we did a show with Scott Hunter talking about MAUI. And I pressed him on this basic issue. He's like, what we're really seeing finally Xamarin becoming part of Microsoft.
Yeah.
Because there still seems like a lot of bits of the Xamarin stacks were very startup-y still.
Yeah.
And that Microsoft has many things, startup not one of them. So to sort of drain that away and make it a more consistent experience.
So it, you know, again, we can only speculate because I can't, you know, I can look in what they've said and what they show us. And if you've used Xamarin, you know that you have multiple projects inside of a single solution, each of which targets a different platform. It's convoluted. If you want to do something as simple as adding a set of images to the app, they have to be referenced and literally placed within each project separately in different, completely different ways.
Yeah.
you know,
because the aspects of the hardware suddenly are manifest in something as trivial as resources for an app. Like, why is this showing up for me here?
Yeah, that's exactly the kind of thing that this type of framework should abstract to the developer.
And it is the promise, right? Like, but they are saying that it's going to be a single project. There's going to be a single set of resources.
Yeah. So it sounds like this is a good solution. So we'll see.
Yeah. You know? But it's still a year plus away. So you are making bold promises. You know, you're painting a vision. You're not showing a product.
Oh, 1.0 is the end of next year. This is, you can't rely on this today.
No.
And that's a little bit of a problem. So when I look at Xamarin Forms today, it's like, well, yeesh, this kind of a UWP-like thing for creating Windows apps in there, but it was really for Windows Mobile, and it's not as powerful as what you get in a full UWP.
And yet, how could you consciously work on a UWP app at this particular moment?
I know.
You know, like you just, if I'm building in Xamarin Forms, I know this is what gets carried forward into MAUI. So, we may not be wildly happy with it, but at least we know it's got a path forward. I just don't see a path forward for the existing UWP stack.
Yeah. Well, again, like you said, I mean, pulling out WinUI, and I think they're going to pull out more in the future. One of the neat things they've done is giving you the ability to create or at least update existing desktop apps with these features. That to me is actually very useful, because I've experimented a lot with the different Microsoft frameworks over the past several months, and I find most of UWP to be really painful. But the one thing I really liked was the XAML UX stuff. And I wanted, in my mind, like the app I was building, I was thinking, man, I really like WPF, but I'd love to have the XAML from UWP in there.
Yeah.
And that's what they're doing. That's neat.
Yeah. It does seem like they're taking all the best ideas they're trying to get. And just this idea that when you're learning XAML, that there's at least three flavors. UWP, WPF, Xamarin Forms. You know, and there's actually more, but let's not even go there. You know, which one do you pick? Do you need to decide? What are the consequences when you try and cross between them? And it's like, it's all close enough that you think it's going to work and you're wrong.
No, it's worse than that. It's like when if you learn any programming language, you're familiar with this notion of C-like programming language, C++, C#, Java, JavaScript, whatever. The differences will always be what kill you. The little tiny things, you know, the different flavors of XAML are like the problem with the Xamarin Forms I just raised. It's like, they're kind of like basic things. Like, they don't make any sense. Like, you'll have a text box that's a text block over here and has different properties. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the property to display text is text, and sometimes it's caption, and sometimes it's content. Yeah. And sometimes, it's like, it's
painful.
It's madhouse crazy how different they can be. And it's a stumbling block, because you should be able to move up the ranks through those different flavors through the different frameworks. And access XAML, it's very comforting. I love XAML, but the differences can really kill you.
Really be painful, and it's not simple to work otherwise. I am appreciative of, though, that is a relatively small amount of the library of software that the average organization is dealing with, that it is all of these Win32 apps that represent the backbone of the company still, that have no energy for rewrites really. And you've got to keep them in a can that it doesn't represent a security risk. It doesn't represent a deployment problem. Like, how, maybe reunion's the thing. Like, at least I like the motion they're in, that it's like, okay, you recognize we have to take care of this software. It's not going away.
There's a lot of solutions now for that kind of stuff, right? So they're obviously working on this thing for Windows 10X and probably Windows Desktop, where Win32 apps can be contained literally in their own container, separate from the rest of their operating system, which is kind of interesting from a security perspective. Things like the Windows Virtual Desktop, which I really didn't pay much attention to, because I thought, the notion of running a virtualized instance of Windows 10 from the cloud is, okay, whatever. But if you're familiar with the kind of AppV, MedV stuff from back in the MDOP days, it performs both sides of those functions, meaning you can virtualize the entire desktop if that's what you want, or that's what you have to have because you're running on an iPad or a Mac or something. Yeah. But you can also deploy virtual apps to desktops.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what a great, interesting solution, and a whole other set of shows that I'm doing around, especially during pandemic times.
Right.
Hey, let's just leave these in a fancy version of Citrix. No deployment issues, really, and folks just call into it.
Well, yeah, because everyone's thinking we're all working from home. You know, PC sales must be through the roof. Well, we're all working from home. It's like, what do I have? You know, I have a 12-year-old Dell. Well, that's probably too old, but I have whatever computer you had in the closet in your home office. You're going to turn the thing on and say, okay, work. I want to connect to you. What can I do?
Yeah.
You know,
hello. Can I make this happen? And so that's certainly very compelling. But you talk about Windows cycles. How many Windows 10X? How many times has Microsoft tried to carve off a portion of Windows to make a more robust, you know, reliable one that just does a few things with a switch to go back to the ooey gooey world again, and everybody flips the switch?
So I feel like they've gotten really close, and I feel like if they can figure out the performance issues and compatibility issues with the Win32 container, this system could make some sense.
I mean, how many times have we said that statement to?
It's embarrassing to me as a writer how many times I've said, you know, if this works,
it'll be great.
This could be the next NT, you know. But that really is that's the story, right? So you could go back to, you know, Windows RT, just to stick to the desktop stuff. Obviously, Windows 10 on ARM, Windows 10S and S mode.
Yes.
And the thing I always said about S mode is, I get it. Like I understand why you want to do this.
Oh yeah. No, from an IT perspective, S was awesome. From a user's perspective, except for the tech support, like it was just catastrophic.
All they needed to do was have a policy based thing for businesses or some kind of a GUI for users where they could essentially have an allow list of those Win32 apps they wanted to let through.
Yeah.
Right. So in other words, I wouldn't do this today because Edge is out. But, you know, back when this thing first came out, look, S mode, get it. Fine. You got to let me run Chrome, you know?
Yeah.
Just that one thing, or Photoshop, whatever it is, like just the one thing. Or the killer, and this is the killer on ARM and maybe always will be, is the device driver stuff. Like,
yeah,
I just need to get the custom software that comes from my printer all in one thing with the scanner and everything. I just need that to work.
Yeah. When I stick this USB thing in, it should just work. And for better or worse, on regular Windows, most of the time it just works. And on everything else, not so much.
Yeah. And I feel like if they had just done this with S mode, this system could have worked.
And this sounds like this is what X is, besides the whole dual screen thing, which whatever.
That was always a feint. You know, it's like a magician waving their hands. Look over here.
I'm not saying I'm not getting one. But that is not a driver for an OS. Save me. Right?
Well, and we had leaks of this thing from a long time. This was never about dual screens. When they announced it, the one thing we were confused by was the dual screens. Like, what? dual screens?
Why?
I mean,
I appreciate they've moved down the alphabet, but it means they pretty much have to get this one right, because all there is left is like Z. You're going to do 10Z and that's it? Okay, no, 10Z, this time we mean it.
I do think there is an understanding inside and outside of Microsoft that if they don't get this one right, then we're just done. We're not doing this anymore. Like,
but I understand they're making Microsoft employees dog food 10X like crazy, frustration levels too, because it does have issues. Well, of course, it was early bit.
Yeah, and right. So this is the thing, you know, people, and I do this too. I mean, we all get a little focused on the UI stuff. We think about the simplified user interface and the dual screen thing, but really there's a big foundational infrastructure piece here with this container system, and it has to work, and it can't just kind of work. It has to literally perform well and be really compatible.
Yes.
And I think those are the two areas where it's fallen short so far, you know, predictably, right?
And they're incredibly tough constraints. And you only get so many shots at this, right?
Yeah.
People flip it off and then never flip it back on again when you've lost them. There's few enough people that are even going to try it. And then you lose those people with no way back.
Even 10S has some weirdness to it. I got a, what was it? It must have been the Surface Go 2 review unit came in S mode. Mm-hmm. And they had pre-installed the new Edge browser, which is great. I'm going to use that anyway. But that default apps interface in Windows 10S lacks, there's no way to configure the default browser. So it would try to run some protocol or whatever that wasn't linked to the new one, and it would come up with a little dialogue. What did you want to run this with?
And you're like,
and like, you'd have to just do this one at a time. And I'm like, why can't I just make this the default? And then the other one was Photoshop Elements, which you can get in the store, which is great. Would install but not run under S mode. And then, you know, finally I just got rid of S mode and it cleared up both of those problems.
Yeah. And then you're lost. Like you're not going back.
It's a one-way dead end street.
Totally. And it's unfortunate. And it's funny, like, again, you're talking about the cycle because I went and got a Slate now that I'm home for a while, the Pixel Slate, which is running Chrome OS. And you're right. It's hugely constrained, but it's reliable. Yeah. The things that it can do does fine. Bunch of things can't do.
I have looked at Chrome OS so much. I probably have half a dozen Chrome books in my house easily. And you look at it from a distance and I think I could do this, but when I use it, it's weird how constrained it feels. And I can't even today express exactly why. Is a workflow thing that is different, which you could probably adapt to.
I've resisted the pen so far. I'm just not going to go there. The thing that gets me is the number of times whatever app I'm running goes, I'm in an Android phone and will only be portrait. So I now have this giant portrait, like, look at my mutant phone.
Yeah. And I even tried to deal with that. You could, you know, it's like, it's a music app. Who cares if it looks like a phone or, you know, it's whatever. But yeah, that, and there's actually one of the complexities to Chrome OS, as simple as it is, now that they've added the ability to run Android apps, you run into a situation. Well, I want to run Microsoft Word. Do I run the Android app version or do I run the web version?
Right.
Each of them has some unique advantages over the other.
Yeah.
The Android app one doesn't always render well on a Chromebook for some reason. It looks kind of weird. But now it's up to you as the user. You decide. There are two versions of OneNote. There's two versions of Outlook. There's two versions of whatever.
Well, and clearly Chrome OS has not taken off. So the fact that, you know, and I was bringing that up in the point of view of, you know, they trying to keep making a version of Windows that's more Chrome OS-y. And it's like, this isn't actually a happy place, you know?
Yeah. Well, the one thing that Microsoft has learned, and we've all learned, anyone who's tried this stuff, we go back to, again, the RT, the Windows 10 on ARM and S mode, is you can't throw something in front of a user that looks exactly like Windows and doesn't run Windows apps.
Right.
You know, it
you're guaranteed to make them angry.
Yeah. That thing's not Windows. Don't make it look like Windows, you know? And that might be part of the impetus behind the UI change in Windows 10X. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe if it doesn't look like Windows, you know, there won't be that expectation.
Well, and the other thing is you keep putting a ripcord in and people keep pulling it because they got, it turns out you care way more about an operating system than they do. And at some point they actually I actually had work to do. That's why I'm here.
Right.
You know, and so I'm only going to fight with your tool for so long. Then I'm going to get back to work.
Yeah. And there are plenty of people who really wanted to make this work and they've tried. And yeah, eventually you always run into that one thing. You're like, no, I need this.
Yeah. It's a thing and it's a different thing for each person. And it's everything, right? You just sort of unravel.
The double-edged sword of Windows, you know, it's huge environment of possible configurations and tools and ways of doing things. And you have navigated your own path and it's different from everyone else.
And it's just so far away from the average IT guy's view right now. It's like, I have a working set of images for desktop machines right now. You know, like, definitely changes good. You go first. Like, you let me know if you can make X work for you and I will look at your case study and consider how much of my organization could work this way. You know, I'm going to need some real metrics around when I have, you know, I have this group of people that are capable of using X and I have this much less support problems from them. And there's an ROI in there. But those are hard numbers to make.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even in this conversation, we've kind of discussed, you know, multiple different ways of doing things. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's part of the problem.
Yeah.
You know,
but every time we try and take away ways, people get unhappy.
Well, you know, you've got this, like, we're home and people are probably using their own computers in many cases to get work done. So they got to connect to work somehow. And there are VPNs and there are web apps and there are virtual apps and environments. And there's all these different ways of doing it. And at some point, I don't know, do you just give up? I mean, just whatever, we're going to support all these different ways. So just whatever one you're using an iPad, fantastic. Then do this,
right?
You know, I don't know. It gets really complex.
Yeah, it's not simple. But if it was easy, everybody would be doing it.
Right. Well, like we would have nothing to talk about.
If, and clearly, we have plenty to talk about. We ramble on as usual. But I do feel like there's a theme to this conversation. I'm pretty pleased with it, actually. Like,
wow.
It's an interesting story about the challenge, you know, this cycle in Windows that we're seeing. And they're trying again, I think, to do the right things.
They clearly want to do the right thing. Microsoft... The Windows org, I guess, in this case. I mean, they could communicate a little more clearly. Mm-hmm. And I've always said that. But again, that them not doing that has given me a rich career. So I guess I appreciate that.
Couldn't make this many podcasts if they had everything started.
Thousands of episodes later.
Yes, yeah. I'm at over 700 for Run As now. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're up to 675-ish on Windows Weekly.
Yeah.
Several hundred. But the tech, I don't know. I can't keep track.
They're all just random numbers. Paul, always fun to talk to you. Thanks so much for having this conversation with me.
I can't wait till you visit again, Richard. Maybe there'll be another pandemic or
you're out of cheesies, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Send an airlift,
please. Thank you.
No, thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.